Good evening. I'm pretty sure Venerable Chodron is in Moscow tonight, and she'll be back next Tuesday, back to the Abbey next Tuesday, and we'll see if she's feeling well enough to teach next Thursday. But tonight, let's begin by cultivating our motivation. As Buddhist practitioners, we're involved in developing both method and wisdom, the accumulations of method and the accumulations of wisdom. And with each of those, we can identify for ourselves short-term goals and long-term goals. So perhaps we would agree that the long-term goal with the accumulation of the method is developing spontaneous and uncontrived bodhicitta. And perhaps we feel like that's too big of a goal for this life, but certainly all of us can aspire to decrease our afflictions and increase our kindness, our compassion, our patience with each other, our ethical conduct, our generosity. And so each of us will have our own specific short-term goals for maybe for the day or for the month or for the year or for this lifetime, as well as holding to this long-term goal of aspiring to develop uncontrived bodhicitta. And with the wisdom side of the path, full awakening or full enlightenment or non-abiding nirvana of a Buddha is identified as our long-term goal. And again, some of us may feel daunted by that, the expanse of that goal. But certainly we'll have our own personal short-term goals for today, for this month, for this year, for this lifetime. And perhaps they include things like developing our understanding of the Four Noble Truths, understanding the three higher trainings, the 12 links, four-point analysis, thank you. And maybe many other things. And so we need both, don't we? We need both method and wisdom. We need to bring them together in one mind. And so this study of logic and reasoning in the Buddhist tradition is really designed to help us sharpen our minds. It helps us to understand a common basis of a Buddhist worldview so we can speak a common language. And it also sharpens our mind, which will be beneficial for developing both the method aspect of the path and the wisdom aspect of the path. So maybe we could just take a moment to check for ourselves and see what kind of short-term goal we can create in our own mind that includes the study of this beautiful text by Dan Perdue, A Course of Buddhist Reasoning and Debate. And of course, we're doing this so that we can be of greatest benefit to all living beings. That's the ultimate purpose here. We left off on page 154 at the bottom, and for the ebook users, the title of that section is called Examples of Permanent Phenomena. But maybe before we jump right into reading the text, we can do a little bit of debate, a little bit of review to continue increasing the imprints on our mind stream of the material that we've been covering. So it's good to go all the way back to the beginning. So if I said to you the definition of selfless can't be posited, what would you say? All follows that the definition of the selfless can be posited. Posit that definition, Christina.
The subject that which is observed by a reliable cognizer.
So it follows that the definition of the selfless is not that which is without a self? How do you respond to that? You have two choices.
Why?
Why? Because that's what the collected topic says.
I accept.
Okay. Good. Okay, so thank you. That was actually helpful because that shows us how if a person gives an answer that's not quite spot on, we can still use that in our debate. We don't have to get thrown off. We can say, okay, well, what I know about that definition is that it's da-da-da-da-da. And then the other person can either say why or I accept. And then it helps both of us to learn because we have repeated that definition a couple of times. And now hopefully it's firmly implanted in your mind and hopefully you'll never forget it. Okay, so the selfless is that which is without a self. And so the selfless, the divisions of the selfless can't be posited. What do you say? Come on, speak up. There you go. Okay, the divisions of the selfless can be posited. What are they? Noble Tarpa.
I accept the divisions of the selfless are existence and non-existence.
So it follows that the divisions of the selfless are existence and non-existence.
I accept.
Great. That's right. Okay, how about this? The selfless is existent. So here we're talking about the category. The selfless is existent.
I accept.
Please posit a reason why the selfless is existent.
Because an existent is that which is observed by a reliable cognizer.
Well, that's a very good answer. That's the definition of an existent. But if we think about it for just a moment, like the category, selfless, is either going to be existent or non-existent. And what do we know about that? If something includes both existent phenomena and non-existence, what do we say about that category as a whole?
That it's existent.
That it's existent. Right. Thank you. Okay. So both answers would be acceptable, wouldn't they? Okay. How do the two compare, selfless and existent?
Three P with nothing
is that is neither. And why is there nothing that is neither?
It's three P with nothing that is neither because the selfless encompasses everything.
Everything.
All that.
That's right. There's nothing outside of that largest circle, which is selfless, because it includes existence
and non-existent.
Okay. How do the two compare existent and non-existent? They are mutually exclusive. It's true, but we also said we can't compare something that doesn't exist. Not trying to be tricky, I'm just... Okay, I'll go back to basics. The definition of existent cannot be posited. How's that? The definition of existent cannot be posited. Oh, so it follows the definition of existent can be posited. Wonderful! Posit that definition.
The definition of existence is that which is realized and is observed by a reliable cognizer.
So it follows that the definition of existence is that which is realized by a reliable cognizer. Yes. Wonderful. Okay. There are two definitions that are very similar in wording to this definition. What are they? What are those definitions that are very similar to the one she just gave for existent?
The definition for established base and for an object of comprehension.
There you go. And say it again.
The definitions for established base and for an object of comprehension.
Okay, would you like to posit those definitions?
An established base is that which is established by a reliable cognizer, and an object of comprehension is that which is realized by a valid cognizer or reliable cognizer.
Excellent. Okay. How do the two compare, existent and established base? Right. They're mutually inclusive because?
They are mutually inclusive terms, definitions, because they are part of the eight definitions that are mutually inclusive with existence or equivalent to existence.
Very good. Can you think of another reason? That's a good reason. Can you think of another reason? Maybe something that we talked about last week? When things are mutually inclusive? They share the eight doors of pervasion. It follows that those eight doors of pervasion cannot be posited, Venerable Dhamsa. Oh, it follows it can be posited.
Excellent.
Okay, thank you. Can you please posit those for existent and established base?
Existent
If it is an existent, then it necessarily is an established base. If it is an established base, then it necessarily is an existent. If an existent exists, or is it if it exists as an existent?
If it's not an existent.
Oh, yeah. If it's not an existent, then it's necessarily not an established base. If it is not an established base, it's necessarily not an existent. And then if an existent exists, then necessarily an established base exists. If an established base exists, then it then the existent necessarily exists. Mm-hmm. If an existent does not exist, then an established base necessarily does not exist. If an established base does not exist, then an existent necessarily does not exist.
Excellent. Thank you.
No, you have to repeat it back.
Oh.
I
don't have to. I could. So it follows that the 8 doors of privation are. Okay. I think we got it. All right. Now there are 5 remaining definiendums equivalent with existing. Can those be positive? Yes. Please posit those definiendums without looking at your piece of paper. Okay, so who can? Who can? Can you? Okay, give it a try. This is a learning process. It's okay. It's all right to give it a go.
So the definition of a phenomenon?
Not definition, just the definiendums.
Okay.
So we have existent, established base, and object of comprehension.
So we have an object, an object of knowledge, a hidden phenomena, and a phenomena.
And one more.
And an object realized, object of comprehension of an omniscient consciousness.
Excellent. Good job. Okay. All right. So that's just a little bit of review of what we did last night. Did it help you kind of perk up and get some energy? Okay. What would you say to this? There are 8 main pairs that illustrate the Buddhist understanding of existence for the Sutra School following reasoning. There are 8 main pairs that illustrate the Buddhist understanding of existence for the Sutra. It's a little bit of a trick question, okay? I'll give you a hint. There are 7. That's right. Good. There are 7 pairs. And who can posit at least 3 of those pairs? We've covered one of them, okay?
Impermanent phenomena and permanent phenomena. Things and non-things. Composed or compounded phenomena and uncompounded phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Produced phenomena and unproduced phenomena. Existent and non-existent? No. Okay, that's about as far as I can remember.
Good, you got 4. Excellent. Can anyone else think of the last 3?
Hidden phenomena and manifest phenomena, compounded phenomena and uncompounded phenomena, specifically characterized phenomena and generally characterized phenomena, products and non-produced phenomena.
Mm-hmm. There's one more. Yeah, you overlap too, but there's one more that's missing.
Functional thing and phenomena that are non-things.
Well, yes, that's good, but Venerable Simke got that when she said things. Things and functioning things are equivalent terms.
Ultimate truth, truth and unconventional truth.
All right. Venerable Pende has been studying. Thank you very much. Wonderful. Okay. Just got a few more here. All right, the definition of impermanent phenomena, this is from last week. The definition of impermanent phenomena can be posited.
Why?
Can be posited. Thank you. I'm just mixing it up a little bit. I don't want you to get so formulaic that you can't go outside of the box. It can be posited, right? Posit that definition of impermanent phenomena.
The definition of an impermanent phenomena is a momentary phenomena.
Excellent. So it follows that the definition of an impermanent phenomena is a momentary phenomena.
I accept.
Good. Good thing. What about the definition of permanent phenomena? It can't be posited. Why? Oh, so it follows the definition of permanent phenomena can be posited. All right. Venerable Simke.
Follows that the definition of permanent phenomena is that which is non-momentary.
You got part of it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know where that belongs. It's at the beginning of the definition.
The beginning.
The
yep.
definition of a permanent phenomena is a common locus, which that is.
Common locus of two things. What are they? You had one.
Non-momentary.
Uh-huh. And?
And.
Phenomena.
Oh, phenomena.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I lost that one.
So it's a common locus of phenomena.
Of two things.
And the
non-momentariness.
Right. So to say that it's a phenomena excludes non-existence. And to say it's
non-momentary
excludes it's impermanent
phenomena.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. Okay. Yes.
Do you know why it's phrased that way rather than just to say that the definition of a permanent phenomena is a non-momentary phenomena? Why do they go to the common locus of a phenomena and the non-momentary?
No, I don't.
Because if non-existent, it's non-momentary.
Yes, but if you said a non-momentary phenomena, wouldn't that take care of it?
Yeah, it does, but you have to have phenomena. Mm-hmm. Non-existent is not a phenomenon.
Right. So he's...
Don't they just say a non-momentary phenomena?
Instead of saying the common locus. He's wondering about that phrase. I don't know. Hold that question and we'll see if we can find someone who can answer that for you. Okay. The divisions of permanent phenomena cannot be posited. Okay, so it follows that the divisions of permanent phenomena can be posited. Please posit those.
One division.
Okay. We'll start with one.
That's the only one I know. Stable, permanent
stable
phenomena.
Stable or abiding phenomena.
And stable.
Okay.
And the ones that exist. Yeah. I know how to say, I know what they mean, but I don't know the words. And those that exist for an occasion.
Okay. So that was a group effort. That's very good.
Thank you.
There are two. There's what's called stable or abiding permanent phenomena. And those are things that they're more like enduring. They kind of fit that description of enduring. So, for instance, uncompounded space is enduring. It doesn't ever stop. Or the selfless, it doesn't ever stop. But things like the emptiness of the cup is an occasional permanent, because when the cup goes out of existence, the emptiness of the cup, which is permanent, goes out of existence. Mm-hmm. So that's an occasional permanent, the emptiness of the cup.
Use the word occasional and non-occasional, right? I think that's the words that we were used to from
okay.
Yeah, but he uses different ones, so.
Yeah, so this will stretch our mind to have more than one understanding of those divisions, but basically they're getting at the same thing, aren't they?
Yeah, they are the same.
Yeah, okay. How do the two compare, permanent phenomena and eternal phenomena? Permanent and eternal phenomena. You're saying 3P?
Any?
Or four. You have to choose one, Venerable. Hedging her bets over there. Permanent and eternal. Do you remember? We talked about it last week. We put it up on the board. So it's good to review it. 4P. Okay, so posit something that's both. Permanent and eternal. Okay, so uncompounded space is something that's both.
Space.
Permanent phenomena and eternal phenomena. Okay, something that is permanent phenomena but not eternal phenomena.
The emptiness of the computer you're using right now.
Yeah, and something that is eternal but is not permanent. Eternal phenomena but not permanent phenomena.
Nirvana.
No, that's permanent.
That's
nirvana
permanent.
Is permanent.
Okay, so what did you say? Something that is
eternal phenomena. But it's not permanent,
not.
So it'd have to be impermanent phenomena.
Impermanent. Oh.
Something that is eternal, that is impermanent.
Oh, continuum, mental continuum.
Mental continuum.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could posit other things like time. What else? Matter ever go out of existence? Hard to know. Okay. All right, so this is an example of how you can debate with anybody, given what we've studied just so far, just what, 20 pages or so in the text. So this is what Venerable Dunya was exemplifying for us when he was here. How you just take, and the beauty is that we're learning a common language now by studying this ontology of collected topics, how things exist. And so this is a way to refresh our memories, and it kind of brings you, like we went all the way back to the beginning. We started with selfless and just picked some of the highlights of what we've been covering.
And then we might settle on something that we're studying currently and then go into even more focused detail about that. Like we've been going pretty slowly, just building this general outline or scaffolding. Now, in the next chapter, we're going to get into even more detail. Right now, we're still covering just these general explanations of the different ways of dividing existence. Yeah.
Can I share a syllogism?
Please.
Stephen, the subject, Stephen, will hear the syllogism because Stephen is the person that edits the videos. Is that a correct syllogism?
Okay, so Stephen.
The audios. Okay. Sorry, I got shot right down.
That's right. Well, we can modify it. So the subject, Stephen, will hear
the syllogism. Because Stephen is the person that edits the audio from this teaching.
Okay, so Stephen is the person who edits this audio from the teaching. So for that property of the subject to be established, we have to have someone who has realized that Stephen is the person who... edits the audio of these teachings.
That'll be Stephen, because he's the one that's going to hear this.
Okay. Well, and also the person who assigned him the task. But that person also has to have a doubt whether Stephen will listen to the syllogism. Do you actually have a doubt that he'll listen to the syllogism?
No.
There you go. You finished.
Okay.
You have to have a doubt about the thesis. Otherwise, what's the point of having the syllogism? But good try.
That's true. Okay. I just had to put that in there because we were talking. He said he likes our syllogisms.
All right. Let's go back to page 154 where we left off. So we're at the bottom. It begins with examples of permanent phenomena. Okay. So we're just finishing up this discussion of existence being divided into permanent and impermanent phenomena. So here it gives examples of permanent phenomena. In the traditional setting of philosophical debate among the Tibetan monks and nuns, the most popular example of a permanent phenomena is uncompounded space. What has proven to be the most popular example of a permanent phenomena in my classes is nirvana, the state of liberation of one who has left the round of rebirths. Why is nirvana considered to be permanent phenomena? If it is a permanent phenomena, and permanent phenomena do not arise from causes and conditions, then how could it be that the Buddhists make the claim that we can achieve nirvana by making effort on the path? I guess this doubt came up in some of his college students. It is because nirvana itself is not a consciousness, but is a condition, or we could say a state or a quality. It's a state or a quality of a consciousness, the mind free of the causes of suffering, specifically the mental afflictions of desire, hatred, and ignorance that Buddhists say give rise to all suffering. Nirvana is not the mind itself, which is an impermanent phenomena, but an absence of something in the mind that used to be there. So it's the mere absence. Nirvana is the mere absence of the ceased affliction in the continuum of the meditator. And all the different tenet schools will have different descriptions of what that actually means, but this is not our purpose tonight to go into a long discussion about nirvana. A nirvana is an analytic cessation that comes into existence upon the abandonment of the last affliction. Okay, so when there are two different sets of obscurations that we're trying to overcome. One is the afflictive obscurations, and those include the afflictions and their seed, and then the cognitive obscurations, which are the imprints or the latencies that are left behind from grasping it through existence. And so someone who has eliminated that first set of obscurations, the afflictive obscurations, is considered an arhat. So that includes hearers, solitary realizers, and even bodhisattvas. Okay, so nirvana is an analytical cessation that comes into existence upon the abandonment of the last affliction. So when someone has achieved nirvana, they are no longer controlled by karma and afflictions. They no longer experience suffering like ordinary beings. It is not the act of cessation or the act of passing beyond sorrow, but a phenomena possessed in the continuum of a yogi, that is a meditator, that is the mere absence of the ceased afflictions. Nirvana is called an analytical cessation because it is a mere absence that comes into existence due to meditative analysis. There are analytic cessations and non-analytic cessations. Analytic cessations are the ones that have actually abandoned something in a manner that it can never return again. So when there has been an abandonment, like with a direct non-conceptual realization of emptiness, some portion of the afflictive obscurations have been abandoned, and those will never reoccur again. That's what we're aiming for. That's our long-term goal, because we're trying to overcome suffering. And once we've accomplished that, then we can easily show others how to do that. A non-analytic cessation is like a temporary cessation. It can also come about due to meditation, but it hasn't accomplished an abandonment. So it may have suppressed the afflictions, but it hasn't completely abandoned them. This nirvana is the true cessation that is the third of the four noble truths. It's a dharma jewel, isn't it? True cessations and true paths. The word cessation, which is the time-honored translation for the third noble truth, is not a very frequent word in English. We see it only in the phrase smoking cessation programs. It means stopping, ceasing the state of cessation. Okay, stopping, ceasing the state of cessation. Nirvana is the state of cessation of the causes of suffering, which in this system are identified as afflictions and their seeds and karma. Now, this is like the absence of elephants in a room. Not like shuffling all the elephants out of the room, because we didn't have any elephants in here. You know, you can observe directly a room without elephants. There is an absence of elephants in this room, isn't there? However, the absence of elephants in a room would be to apply the above terminology, a phenomena possessed in the continuum of a room that is the mere absence of the exited elephants. He has some really interesting analogies and examples. That absence is not the act of clearing the room of elephants, okay? There weren't any elephants to begin with, but there is an absence of elephants in this room. Okay, so that absence is not the act of clearing the room of elephants, which is the effect of the efforts of the elephant wranglers. Indeed, Buddhists claim that we can achieve nirvana by making effort on the path, sort of like the efforts of the elephant wranglers, in that we can make efforts to overcome all of our harmful emotions and attitudes that give rise to suffering. Then, when we have done it, the mind is free of the causes of suffering. Thus, suffering will not arise again. Nirvana in the mental continuum of one who has left the round of rebirth is a permanent phenomena that exists for an occasion, or an occasional permanent phenomena, like we were saying. Well, it's occasional because... I thought about this before. Let me see if I can recall what I came to. Okay. Nirvana is in the mental continuum of one who has left the round of rebirth is a permanent phenomena that exists for an occasion. Because it hasn't always existed.
In that continuum.
Right. In that continuum. Because we're talking about a specific continuum.
From that point to eternity.
Then it's...
That's the occasion.
I reckon for something to be enduring, it would have to be beginningless and endless. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have a definition of that term, enduring phenomena. But I bet that's what that means. Mm-hmm. So if something either can cease, like the emptiness of the cup ceases when the cup ceases... But that has a beginning and an end, really. Yeah, that's how I would understand it, that because it hasn't, the cessation in that continuum has not always existed. Now, yeah, an emptiness has always existed. Well, yeah, and we can say an emptiness has always existed in that continuum, but not a cessation, which is the abandonment of some portion of the obscurations. Does that make sense? Okay. More on that to come in Paths and Grounds. Okay. Let's see. Maybe it explains it. I don't remember. Is a permanent phenomenon that exists for an occasion from the time the meditator abandons the last mental affliction and after. Okay. So it's saying that from that point on, it has a beginning, and from that point on, even though it appears to be enduring forever, mm-hmm. it's still an occasional permanent phenomenon because it had a beginning. It is a central belief of Buddhism that this state of abandonment will not degrade and one will not be forced to return to suffering. Admittedly, for those of us who have not achieved nirvana, this remains an article of faith, but one worthy of reflection. Well, not blind faith, right? We can actually think about this in terms of applying reasons. I remember Geshe Tashi Sering telling this story. He had gone to a conference of scientists at one point in Australia, and he was sitting next to a scientist who asked him, "So why do you think liberation is possible?" And without missing a beat, Geshe Tashi Sering just said, "Because self-grasping ignorance is a wrong consciousness." It made such perfect sense to him. Can't you see that? So because what prevents us from being liberated now, or what prevents us from being enlightened now, are these obscurations. And these obscurations are dependent on self-grasping ignorance, aren't they? Both the afflictive obscurations and the cognitive obscurations somehow relate back to self-grasping ignorance. So if we can remove self-grasping ignorance, the mind can be completely liberated from all the other afflictions that depend on self-grasping as its basis. Okay, so that's a correct syllogism. Liberation is possible because self-grasping ignorance is a wrong consciousness. Well, I'm not sure that, no, that doesn't line up. Okay, let me think about that some more. Anyway, the point I wanted to make here is that it says this remains an article of faith. But don't let that put you off. You know, we need to develop faith. We need, admiring faith when we think about the good qualities of people or qualities of mind, like calm abiding. We develop clear faith or admiring faith for qualities like concentration and serenity. We need faith and conviction when we think about the law of cause and effect or the 12 links. We need aspirational faith that, you know, holds this idea that it's possible for us to achieve these things. And so then that moves us from faith to full-blown aspiration, the conviction that I'm going to attain that, or the aspiration that I'm going to attain that. Okay. Not every example of a permanent phenomena is a mere absence or a negative, as space is a lack of obstructive contact, and nirvana is an absence of an affliction following a final abandonment. So not every example of permanent phenomena is a mere absence. For instance, all of the names that go along with existent, established base, object of knowledge, etc., the ones that Venerable Nyima gave us, as well as their definitions that go along with them, make a note of that, underline that. That which is established by a valid cognizer and that which is suitable as an object of an awareness and so on are permanent phenomena. So not And just think for a moment, why is it that those large categories are a permanent? It's just a convention, right? If a category includes permanent phenomena and impermanent phenomena, the whole category is considered permanent. And likewise, if there are existence and non-existence in one category, the whole category is considered existent. It's just a convention that we're working with. But this thing about definitions, you know, usually we would think of a definition as impermanent. Well, I would. I don't know if you would. But we'll have some examples to work on with this. Okay. It is certainly not that each and every established base is permanent, because, for instance, a chair is an established base, but it is not permanent. Rather, the reason established base itself is permanent is because of the guideline that a group including both permanent phenomena and impermanent phenomena is itself permanent. You can understand established base in and of itself intellectually. You can only understand established base in and of itself intellectually. Okay, so there's another reason. It's nothing that can be known by the senses. It can't be known by a direct perception in this system. That's interesting. All right, then we have this section that is providing us a lot of practice. So I would make a little note next to this paragraph. These are things that you can debate with each other. Okay, so maybe we can work through this list and then you can do it again with each other. You can switch them around a little bit. All right, so Notice the first sentence. Every existence is either a permanent phenomena or an impermanent phenomena. If someone said that to you, what would you say?
Well, okay.
There you go. You'd say, I accept. Because existent, what else would there be? What third category would we include in existence other than permanent phenomena, impermanent phenomena? They are an exhaustive set or exhaustive divisions, we could say. Okay. Yes, an exhaustive dichotomy. That was earlier in the book, wasn't it? Earlier in the text. Okay. And then the next sentence, impermanent phenomena and permanent phenomena are mutually exclusive. If someone said that to you, you'd say,
I accept.
Right. Okay, so you could switch that up. You could say impermanent phenomena and permanent phenomena are mutually inclusive. And just test somebody, you know, if they really understand how those two things are related. All right, and then there's lots of things to compare. The rest of this paragraph is about comparisons. I'll just finish that sentence. So no impermanent phenomena is a permanent phenomena, and no permanent phenomena is an impermanent phenomena. They are mutually exclusive. There's no overlap. There's nothing that's both. Okay, so if we were to draw that, we'd have two circles that don't intersect at all, don't touch. All right, outside the circles of impermanent phenomena and permanent phenomena are only non-existence. So if we were to say, if we were to look for the four examples, if we were comparing impermanent phenomena and permanent phenomena, there would be nothing that's both, right? There would be something that is impermanent phenomena that's not permanent phenomena. You could think of many examples, and there you'd have an example or two of permanent phenomena that's not impermanent phenomena, and then what's something that's neither?
Non-existence.
Right. So you can say a non-existent, or you can say a specific non-existent, like horns of a rabbit or turtle mustache seems to be a popular one. Okay. Both of them compare to the selfless as 3P without anything existent. Okay, so let's set that aside for a moment. How do these two compare? Selfless and permanent phenomena. Can you see it in your mind immediately?
It's a subset.
So what does that mean? If something is a subset, it's automatically 3P. And then we have to check, is it 3P with an example of something that is neither, or 3P that has no example of something that's neither?
3P without.
3P without. Why is that, Venerable Sumpton?
Because selfless includes everything.
Right, there's nothing outside of selfless. That's right. Selfless includes everything. It includes non-existence and existence. That's right. Okay, and so anytime we are comparing anything with the selfless, any phenomena with the selfless, there it will be 3P with nothing that is neither, without anything that is neither, because selfless is the largest category. There's nothing outside of it. Okay, so that's just a convention, something you can hang on to. That's definite. All right.
Selfless and that which is empty compare as mutually inclusive.
Yes.
Good with point. Nothing that is separate. Okay. With nothing outside.
Yes, nothing which is neither. So you would just have something that's both. Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the only thing that, or
any. Or any synonym or equivalent. Yeah. Good. Thank you. He's sharp. Okay. How do these compare? Established base and permanent phenomena. Can you see it in your mind? Established base and permanent phenomena.
Subset.
So 3P, right? Immediately. Let me just draw it up here and maybe this.
Yes. And then, you know, slowly, after we've seen this 100 times, it will stick. Here's the selfless. That's the largest category. And then we have existence and non-existence. And so we've just been looking at one of the seven ways of dividing existence, and that was permanent phenomena and impermanent phenomena. So selfless is the largest category. If we compare it to existence, 3P, that's going to be a subset, right? Mm-hmm. It will look like this. Selfless and existence, or selfless and non-existence. It's 3P without anything that's neither. Okay, so then now I just asked about existence and permanent.
Yes, to establish base.
Oh, establish base. Okay. So that's a, thank you, that's a synonym or equivalent to existent, established base. And so established base and permanent, see how permanent is going to be one of the two divisions. So automatically, you know,
it's sripa.
See how this, so here's existence. And here is, you can draw this a couple of different ways. Here's the permanent phenomenon. And here's the impermanent phenomenon. Okay?
Permanent opposites inside the bigger?
Well, you can draw it like this. You can also draw it like this, but it's harder to see this as a subset. But actually, that is a subset of existence.
Right.
Permanent phenomena is a subset of existence. If you can look at that and see a subset,
yeah.
Great. So that's also 3P.
But when you had the existent as a circle, then you had impermanent, then you have the permanent circle inside the impermanent. Permanent isn't a subset of impermanence.
No, it's a subset of
existence. Right.
Okay, let's do that again so that you see that. So this is permanent phenomena. And what's outside of the permanent phenomena is impermanent phenomena. And they together make up the category of existence.
You couldn't put it in the other way. You couldn't put
you could.
A permanent up in the
sure.
smaller circle.
Why not? It's just a schematic diagram. It's not to scale, okay?
Oh.
It's just for us to see that these are three possibilities.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a good thing to clarify. I mean, sometimes it will be more like this. Like if you had chair an existent phenomena, that would be a much smaller subset of
mm-hmm.
existence, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But this is... You could probably say that there's equal number of permanent things because you always have an emptiness
of something.
That's the basis.
There's more
permanent than impermanent.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. How do the two compare? Hidden phenomena and impermanent phenomena. So we really have to know what's included in hidden phenomena, right? What's it equivalent with? Okay, so hidden phenomena and impermanent phenomena?
3P.
3P, three possibilities. That's right. So instead of established base up there, we could write hidden phenomena. It's equivalent with existence. And so both permanent phenomena and impermanent phenomena will be three possibilities with existence. So you can see how you could spend 10 or 15 minutes just doing the eight equivalents of existence and permanent and impermanent phenomena to get really clear. You could even, okay, I think it's coming up. Yes. No, you could even substitute the definitions. Okay. How do the two compare? That which is established by a reliable cognizer and permanent phenomena.
3P.
That's right. Does that make sense to everyone? Does anyone have a doubt about that? Can you see that? So the definition, although they say the definition is easier to realize than the definiendum, the two are mutually inclusive. So you can substitute them in certain situations. Okay. How do these two compare? Chair and impermanent phenomena. So now we're taking a particular individual impermanent phenomena. So how does chair and impermanent phenomena compare? Can you see it immediately?
3P.
3P. Good. Excellent. 3P with an example of something that's neither. You don't really have to say that. You can just say 3P. The ones without something that's neither are quite specified. It's just with the selfless. Okay. How about this? Permanent phenomena and nirvana. How do they compare?
Mutually
inclusive. 3P and mutually inclusive. 3P, you're sure?
Pretty sure.
Yeah, you're right. Right. So the larger circle, or the pervading circle, we could say, is permanent phenomena, and that which is pervaded is the nirvana, because nirvana is one example of a permanent phenomena. Very good. Okay. And how about this one? Now, this one's tricky. This is the last one in this section. He says, since things such as definitions and definienda include both permanent and impermanent examples, they compare as 4P. Okay, so I'm giving you the answer, but we'll work through it together.
They compare as 4P to impermanent phenomena and permanent phenomena. So let's compare the two, definition and permanent phenomena. Let's write it up so that we can see it.
Permanent phenomena, we'll say that's one, and two is definition. So what's something that's both a definition and a permanent phenomena? Is emptiness a definition?
That which does not which is not a self.
That which lacks a self.
No.
Yeah, that is a permanent phenomena. And that is a definition of substance. That which lacks a self. Very good. Okay, that which lacks a self. Okay, what is something that is permanent phenomena, but not a definition? Emptiness.
True cessation.
True cessation. What are some others?
Uncompounded space.
Said there were
not
a permanent.
Non-cow.
Excellent. And the emptiness of everything we can possibly label or reclaim, right?
Buddha nature.
Which one?
There's two.
Right.
Yeah.
The permanent one.
The permanent one, right.
There's
the abiding Buddha nature, which is the emptiness of the mind, and then there's the
the Dharma,
evolving Buddha nature. Thank you. So that's like the conventional nature of the mind, the fact that the mind can change. Okay, now what is something that is a definition that is not permanent?
The mold is flat.
What is it?
The mold is flat.
Bottom, mother carrier.
You would pick a long one. Can you pick a shorter one?
That which we can sit ourselves on.
What's the definition of impermanent?
Oh, non-momentary.
Momentary phenomena. I should have said impermanent phenomena. Momentary phenomena. We know that one. Okay, and then something that is neither permanent phenomena nor a definition.
Chair.
Car? What was the other one?
Chair.
Very good. Okay, so to answer this question, we really need to understand what's included in permanent phenomena. So we got lots of really good answers. And the emptiness of anything you could think of, also nirvana, uncompounded space, non-cow, non-anything, non-elephants in the room. And definition is going to include both permanent and impermanent definitions. So that you're restricted there to definitions, but it will include. So a definition of an impermanent phenomena is going to be an impermanent, considered an impermanent definition. And a definition of a permanent phenomena is going to be considered a permanent definition.
So that's just a convention, then, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it must be. Rule of debate. Okay. So I just picked out some specific examples, but there are lots of possibilities for mixing and matching those comparisons. So hopefully you'll go through those again, preferably with a partner. It's much more fun. Okay. Now I'd like to introduce something just slightly different. We've already been talking about it, but we're just going to hone in a little bit closer to use the same phenomena we've been talking about, but let's look at the pervasions involved. Okay, so the first thing we looked at was how do the two compare, selfless and permanent? So what kind of statement would we make that would exemplify the way the pervasion goes? Is anything coming to your mind? We talked about pervasive statements previously in the book. When we're looking for the forward pervasion, right? Mm-hmm. So Venerable Losang, what do you think?
Everything that is permanent is selfless, but not everything that is selfless is permanent. That establishes the pervasion. But that's from the comparison chapter, not from... Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah.
Or you're looking for the...
We've been talking
about... The pervasion. Mm-hmm. You're looking for the forward pervasion.
We don't have a full syllogism,
right.
We can't have a... But okay. I was just trying to match up that we've already looked at pervasions when we talked about... syllogisms when we looked at the forward pervasion. So if it's a permanent phenomena, it's pervaded by selfless. That's typically how it's described. Let's put this up here so we can see how it looks.
I'm not 100% sure about the grammar because there aren't articles in Tibetan. So for now, let's just say, if it's permanent phenomena, it is pervaded by selfless. So again, if we just keep selfless in mind, selfless, and then we have permanent and impermanent phenomena. If it's permanent phenomena, it is pervaded by the selfless. So which is going to be of permanent phenomena and selfless, which is going to be the pervader?
Selfless.
And which is going to be the larger circle?
Selfless.
Right. So if permanent phenomena, this is where size will matter. If permanent phenomena is that size, selfless has to be bigger. Right. So my hope is that we can work with this enough that when we just hear a sentence like this, automatically, it appears to our mind that it's pervaded by selfless. Selfless is the larger category, mm-hmm. pervading. So there are two types of pervasion. Remember when we talked about, there was that, I think it was chapter 7, where it said there are two types of pervasion. There will be either mutually inclusive, where the circles are literally on top of each other, or 3P, three possibilities, where one is inside the other. So these are the two types of pervasion. If you have something like this, nothing is actually pervading the other. There is some mutual overlap or some common basis, mm-hmm. common locus.
Why is it modulating?
But there's, you wouldn't use that terminology, pervasion.
And that's 4P.
That's 4P. That's four mm-hmm. possibilities, because we have something that's one, not the other, something that's the other, not the one, and we have something that's both. And typically we have something outside unless one of them is... I wonder if, would selfless be 4P? You work on that, okay?
You come up with an example of something that's 4P with selfless.
You do?
Yeah.
What?
How do the two compare?
No, I was asking you specifically to come up with an example of something that is 4P with selfless. But what is it you want to say?
Okay, so Green Lake, the Green Lake in Seattle,
uh-huh.
and... No. Let's see.
That includes the selfless.
What?
That includes...
No. Wait.
Yeah. That's 4P, but that's not 4P.
Non-Green Lake.
Oh.
And the state of Washington.
Yeah, we did this in the car.
So.
But one of these has to be... Okay.
Non-Green Lake and the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Is this right? Yeah, because...
Is there nothing that's outside?
The only thing outside on Green Lake is Green Lake, and it's in the state of Washington.
Yeah.
That's why we come up with that.
Right. That was
so how it looks.
Okay. All right. So let's.
That's okay.
It's a diversion.
So non-Green Lake, and in the state of Washington.
Well. And everything in and all the area in the state of Washington. Or just the state of Washington.
Yeah. All right, so let's check. Is there something that's both non-Green Lake and area in the state of Washington? What's an example?
Newport, Washington.
Okay, so it's Washington, not Green Lake. Okay. Now, is there something that is non-Green Lake? And it's not an area in the state of Washington.
California.
And is there something that is an area in the state of Washington that is not Green Lake?
Green
Lake. There you go. And then something that is neither.
Canada.
Canada is non-Green Lake.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Non-Green Lake is everything other than Green Lake, and it includes non-existence.
So there's nothing that's neither.
Good job, thank you. All right.
Could you say the emptiness?
That's non-Green Lake. Non-Green Lake includes the emptiness of Green Lake, because it's not Green Lake. It's the emptiness of Green Lake.
And if it was Green Lake, then it would be included in one.
So there isn't anything that's neither?
No.
So when you call it four possibilities, you're not something that's neither.
All right,
so let's come back to pervasion.
Well, that was a pervasion.
Well, no, that wasn't a pervasion.
I guess it was poppy. All right. If it's permanent phenomena, it is pervaded by selfless.
Okay, so if someone said to you, if it's permanent phenomena, it is pervaded by being selfless, you'd say, out of the two possibilities of answers, you'd either say, it's a statement, right? If it's permanent phenomena, it is pervaded by selfless. Actually, what we're saying is permanent phenomena is pervaded by the selfless. So that's a statement to which you could see, you could either say, why, I don't accept that, or I question that, or I accept. Yeah, so you'd say, I accept. Okay. This is similar. I was just trying to make the case that this is similar to checking the forward pervasion in a syllogism. So, for instance, we say the subject, uncompounded space, it is selfless because it is a permanent phenomena. So for someone who knows that uncompounded space is a permanent phenomena and knows that whatever is a permanent phenomena is necessarily selfless, you could say, if it's a permanent phenomenon, it's pervaded by being selfless. That's what we're saying. If it's three, it's necessarily two. If it's permanent phenomena, it's necessarily selfless. That's what that's saying. Okay, so it...
Could you say if it's uncompounded space, it's pervaded by selfless?
You could, because uncompounded space is a subset within. Anything that's permanent phenomena is going to be a subset of selfless. So... selfless is pervaded, wait, permanent phenomena is pervaded by selfless. Does it go the other way? Is selfless pervaded by permanent phenomena? It's not. So unless things are mutually inclusive, it will only go one way. Okay, so here's another one. If it's an impermanent phenomena, it is pervaded by being an established base. We have some nodding heads over here. That means I accept. Okay, if it's a chair, it's pervaded by being impermanent phenomena. So I'm just drawing on the examples that we used earlier. Okay? And if it's nirvana, it is pervaded by being permanent phenomena. If it's momentary phenomena, now I'm using a definition, right? If it's momentary phenomena, it is pervaded by hidden phenomena. Yeah. So momentary phenomena is equivalent with, or it's the definition of, impermanent phenomena. And so what we're really saying is impermanent phenomena is pervaded by hidden phenomena, which is equivalent with existent. So we know that that's the case. Yeah. Okay. You guys are sharp. Okay. Now listen carefully. If it's an established base, it's pervaded by being permanent. If it's an established base, so we're not, okay, if it's an established base, it's pervaded by being permanent.
There's no pervasion.
Yeah, there's no pervasion, so you'd say, why? Why? Because it's just a statement. There's no reason there. Usually when you say no pervasion, really you're talking about, that's the answer in the syllogism. So it follows if it's an established base, it's not pervaded by being permanent.
Except.
No. So posit an example of something that is... an established base that is not permanent.
An established base that is not permanent. A chair.
Yes. So the chair is an example that proves that point, that if it's an established base, it's not pervaded by being permanent. Good. So I don't remember which page this is, but this is in that debate booklet that I sent out last week. So if it's an established base, it's pervaded by being impermanent phenomena. You say, why? Thank you. It follows that if it's an established base, it's not pervaded by being impermanent phenomena. Posit an example. So it follows that if it's an established base, it's not pervaded by impermanent phenomena. So then posit an example that proves that it's not pervaded by impermanent phenomena.
Emptiness.
Emptiness. You'd have to give an example of a permanent phenomena.
The subject emptiness.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Okay. If it's an established base, it's pervaded by being a momentary phenomena.
Why?
Thank you. Why? Excellent. It follows that if it's an established base, it's not pervaded by being a momentary phenomena. Posit something as an example.
Example of an established base that is not pervaded by being a momentary phenomena would be uncompounded space.
Yeah. Anything that's permanent. Any phenomena that's permanent. Okay. If it's an established base, it's pervaded by being the common locus of a phenomena and non-momentary. So what's that the definition? Thank you. All right. It follows that if it's an established base, it's not pervaded by being the common locus of phenomena and non-momentary.
Except.
Okay. Does someone want to posit an example? It follows that if it's an established base, it is not pervaded by the common locus of phenomena and non-momentary.
Right. So that's the definition of a permanent phenomena.
Mm-hmm. So you have to give an example of
and that is in a permanent. I see. You got it. So I'll go back to the chair.
Good. Excellent. Chair works. Chair, stone, whatever.
Microphone.
Okay. So you see how this, you really have to know these definitions well. You have to be able to think quickly. This only comes through practice. So we can draw on what Shawnee Davis said. Everything becomes easier through familiarity. It's just a matter of going over them with a partner. Okay, so we'll read on page 156. We're down at the bottom now. The division of existence into functioning things and phenomena that are non-things. So this is the second of the seven ways of dividing the pie of existence or any of those other equivalent terms. The predominant way that impermanent phenomena are referred to in collected topics debate is as functioning things. And functioning things are usually paired with permanent phenomena in the division of established bases into two. So I don't know why that's the case, but typically when you learn collected topics, they'll say established base is divided into functioning thing, or sometimes just known as thing. That's referring to impermanent, all impermanent phenomena and permanent phenomena. That's just their convention. Here, Dan has paired functioning things with phenomena that are non-things and permanent phenomena with impermanent phenomena. Why? Because it makes more sense. So he's doing that for our benefit. Okay, so let's look at functioning things. Functioning things are mutually inclusive with impermanent phenomena. Functioning things and impermanent phenomena are just different names for the same things. Each and every impermanent phenomena is also a functioning thing. If it's a functioning thing, it's pervaded by impermanent phenomena. If it's impermanent phenomena, it's pervaded by being functioning thing. Pervasion goes both ways, mutually inclusive. Okay, the definition of a functioning thing. The Sanskrit bhava and the Tibetan mumpo, mumo, how do you say it? Mumbo. Mumbo. Thank you. Translated here as functioning thing. Do not actually indicate anything about impermanent phenomena as functioning. However, a functioning thing, or simply a thing, is defined as that which is able to perform a function. Thus, we are reading from the definition back into the name, calling them functioning things. The Sanskrit and Tibetan terms more literally mean something like actuality or even real things. In American English, we normally call the things in the world tangible objects, meaning that they are real things at hand, palpable, real things. However, in this system, tangible objects are just one of the types of functioning things, along with the visible objects, sounds, odors, and so on, as well as things such as consciousnesses and time. Thus, tangible object would not work as a translation term here. In this Buddhist tenet system, functioning things, impermanent phenomena, products are also ultimate truths. It's crazy, but this is how they say. They are raised up in some way that permanent phenomena are not. So it's okay to think of these things all around as real things. Okay, so he's jumping ahead here a little bit. We're going to get to this in, I think, the next chapter where we look at just functioning things and we go into great detail about the three divisions, three main divisions, and then also many more divisions. In any case, by any name, all impermanent phenomena are functioning things. The main function of a functioning thing is to reproduce itself in the next moment. That's a good sentence to underline. If impermanent phenomena are arising, abiding, and disintegrating moment by moment, then the next moment of any impermanent phenomena depends on the former moment of that thing. A lot of things we have are not very practical, but they do perform the function up until the last moment. So these are not functional things in a way that a well-maintained, fueled-up plane sitting quietly on a runway is a functional aircraft, even though it is not a functioning aircraft in the sense of logging hours in flight. As an impermanent phenomena, every part of that plane is functioning to produce the functional plane of the next moment. And then just a brief prelude into the next chapter. The divisions of functioning things into three. The most important divisions of impermanent phenomena is a division of functioning thing into three. Matter, or form, sometimes it's explained that way. Matter, consciousness, and non-associated compositional factors, which we call abstract composites. Thank you. It is essential to take a look at the many parts of that division, the three main parts and the many subdivisions, so that division will be the topic of the next chapter, chapter 10. Basic Buddhist Ontology 2, the division of functioning things into three. Okay. Now, to look at the counter example of that division, phenomena that are non-things. Okay. Why can't we just say non-things? That would include non-existence. Since all impermanent phenomena are functioning things, every permanent phenomena is a phenomena that is a non-thing, or a phenomena that is a non-functioning thing, defined as a phenomena that is empty of the ability to perform a function. Permanent phenomena are stable and inactive, or we could say non-momentary, right? Just use the definition. Non-momentary phenomena. They don't do anything. If an existent performs a function, it is changing, or it would be changing, we could say. The idea is that a chair, for instance, performs the function of creating itself in the next moment, and then in the next moment, it performs a different function and creates itself in the next moment after that. It is changed from a chair that creates a chair in moment n to a chair that creates a chair in moment n plus 1. Permanent phenomena don't do that. They just sit there. I'm not sure. I think he's being a little cheeky. They just sit there. Like, for instance, this cup is impermanent, an impermanent phenomena, and is changing moment to moment. So in each moment, the cup of moment in is giving rise to the cup of moment in one. And that gives rise to the cup of moment in plus two. But the impermanence of the cup arises at the same time of the cup. The cup of the impermanence of cup in one in plus one arises at the same time as cup at the time of n plus one. It's a feature of every impermanent phenomena too. So it's not being created in each moment. It's not changing moment to moment. It's just simply arising with the phenomena. Does that make sense?
It doesn't just arise with the first moment of cup and disintegrate with the last moment of cup.
And it's non-momentary, so it's not changing moment to moment. But it's like an aspect or a quality of each moment of cup. Each moment of cup actually has its own emptiness. And that when that moment ceases, the emptiness of that moment of cup ceases.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you said impermanence.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, you said impermanence.
Thank you. Catch me on those things, because you know how what happens when you talk in public. Your mind sort of disconnects at times. Okay, good. Thank you. All right. So then the next paragraph is another section of practice. Do you want to do this at home on your own, or shall we go through them quickly? Or let's go through them quickly, and then you can go through them at home. Okay. So again, later. Okay. So if I said every existent is either a functioning thing or a phenomena that is a non-functioning thing, you'd say? Yeah. All right, so then we look at how these things compare. Selfless and functioning thing, what immediately comes to your mind?
3P.
And? 3P and?
Anything that's neither.
Without anything that's neither, because selfless is one of them. So that's right. 3P, one is a subset, and there isn't an example of anything that is neither. how do these two compare? Existent and phenomena that is a non-functioning thing. 3P, with something that is neither. Yeah, so existent and phenomena that is a non-functioning thing. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Really, that's saying, it's referring to permanent phenomena. Yeah. Functioning thing is impermanent phenomena, and phenomena that is non-functioning thing is permanent phenomena. So we'll need to go over that a few times to really make that strong association so that it just pops up in your mind.
And to know that non-thing doesn't mean non-existent. That's where I went.
Yeah, that's why we say phenomena that is non-thing. Yeah. Phenomena that is a non-thing or non-functioning thing. Uh-huh. Functioning thing and phenomena that is a non-functioning thing. Yeah. Uncomposed space and phenomena that is a non-functioning thing. 3P. Why are they 3P?
There are other non-functioning things besides whatever you said, which I can't remember.
Uncomposed space.
Uncomposed space.
Yeah. So non-functioning thing, phenomena that is non-functioning thing pervades uncomposed space. They are 3P. Okay. Functioning thing and definition. Okay, let's work it out. So what is a functioning thing? That's an impermanent phenomena. And a definition. A functioning thing and a definition.
Definition is permanent, it has.
Yeah, so we're not talking about the category. We're talking about what the category includes. We're comparing what's in those, 55-gallon drums? Was that? Okay, so something that is a functioning thing and a definition. We know some of those. A momentary phenomena. Yep, okay. What is something that is a functioning thing that is not a definition?
Chair.
What is a definition that is not a functioning thing?
That which is a common locus between a phenomena and a non-momentary.
Excellent. That which is a common locus between phenomena and the non-momentary. And is there something that's neither a functioning thing or a definition? Lots of things. Yeah, we could even think of existence. But yeah, you could always posit a non-existent. Yeah, so it's 4P. Good. Okay. And then just one more. That which is able to perform a function and definition. 4P. Right. So that which is able to perform a function, that's a functioning thing, and a definition. And definition, not a definition, and definition. It's similar to what we just did. We were just looking at functioning thing and definition. Now we're looking at the definition of functioning thing, which is impermanent, and definition, which includes both permanent and impermanent definitions. So it's 4P. The real difference between, okay, so one is a definition. One.
There's a lot of wordplay in Tibetan language, and especially with debate. So when we say definition, we're talking about the category of definition. So the category of definition includes impermanent definitions or definitions of impermanent phenomena, which makes that definition impermanent, and permanent definitions. Why are you laughing?
Wordplay is a good way to describe it.
Yeah. It makes us clever. It sharpens our mind. Okay, so let's look at something. And then that which is able to perform a function is the definition of?
Functioning thing.
Okay, so we're looking at what's the comparison of these two. So what's something that is both a functioning thing, which means what?
A functioning thing includes
all impermanent phenomena and definition. So what's something that's both a functioning thing or that which is able to perform a function and definition?
That which is momentary. But here, are we looking at this as a definition or
as a category?
Or as a category. Because only it is itself, right?
Yes, only it is itself.
So it would be 3P.
But So we said earlier that functioning thing is mutually inclusive.
With impermanent.
With impermanent. They are equivalent in terms of what they're referring to. So when we're comparing things, usually we're comparing categories. Not always. Okay. Like if we were saying a chair, we're just talking about a chair. But if we're talking about chairs, remember how we were talking about how to distinguish categories and individual things? So this is part of our challenge, is to figure out, what are we talking about here? So that which is able to perform a function is a definition, but it's a definition of functioning thing. It's not just, you know, if this was just definition, it would be like a triply qualified substantial existent. You know, it'd be the definition of definition. It wouldn't just be the definition of functioning thing. Does that make sense? So it is a definition, but it's a specific definition. And because it's the definition of functioning thing, it is also impermanent, considered impermanent phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what is something that is that which is able to perform a function and not a definition? Cat. I thought it was Sydney and I was going to be really impressed. Okay, and what is a definition that is not that which is able to perform a function?
Homologous between phenomena and non-voluntary.
So what we need is a definition of a permanent phenomena.
Right.
That will fulfill it will fulfill this criteria of being a definition of something that's permanent. So it's going to be permanent. It's not going to be a functioning thing. All right, so common locus.
Couldn't you just give a definition of any other impermanent phenomenon?
It would have to be a permanent phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could say that which is selfless.
I think, to me, here's where I'm having difficulty.
No. I understand your question. So you're asking, let me just finish this. Okay, so common locus of phenomena and non-voluntary. In other words, this is referring to the definition of permanent phenomena.
You're picking there something that is two and not one.
It's a definition.
Right.
You'll find it in that drum of definitions.
Right.
And it's a permanent definition.
No, it's just a definition.
No, actually, it's a permanent definition because
that is a permanent one, but definition could be any definition, so
right.
You could pick an impermanent one too.
No, because an impermanent one would be that which is able to perform a function.
But you said you want something, that's two but not one.
Yeah.
But see, this is where I'm in Venerable Domtre's camp. To me, that number one is a subset of two.
What did you just put?
Remember, I asked you to underline this. If you go back to page 156,
right.
In the second paragraph, the second sentence says, for instance, all of the names that go along with existent, for example, established base, object of knowledge, and so on, as well as all the definitions that go along with them, that which is established by a valid cognizer, that which is suitable as an object of an awareness, and so on, are permanent phenomena.
We flip back and forth on that, though. When you just said up there that it's an impermanent phenomena, you wrote it on the board.
This is the definition of functioning things.
Right.
The category, functioning things.
Right.
And so this will include every functioning thing.
Right.
Okay.
And you're saying that paragraph you just read is saying that all, could you read that again?
For instance, all of the names that go along with existent,
mm-hmm.
established base, object of knowledge, etc., as well as all the definitions that go along with them, in other words, their definitions.
Right, their definitions.
That which is established by a valid cognizer and that which is suitable as an object of awareness and so on are permanent phenomena.
Yeah, those are. So I see how that relates to this. This definition over there is not a definition of all existence or all the things. You know, number two there is just definition. It's not the definition of those things that you just read, those eight phenomena that you just read.
Right. But, okay, so what's contained within this barrel? Definitions, only definitions. So we'll have definitions of permanent things, and we'll have definitions of impermanent things.
Right.
What's
That's my point.
All functioning things. There will be some definitions in here. Definitions of impermanent phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
There are other things in there as well. So right now we're looking.
Okay, I finally am getting what you're saying.
Yeah, it helps to think about the barrels.
Yeah.
What's confusing is that that which that is a definition, and it would show up in either barrel.
Yeah. So we would find momentary phenomena. That's the definition of impermanent phenomena. Momentary phenomena is going to be here and it's going to be there. But cat is not a definition, so it's only going to be in this barrel. Or call it what you like. Container. So what's going to be in the definition barrel that is not a functioning thing?
Oh, which includes the impermanent definitions.
That's right.
Okay.
So it's got to be a definition.
But it's got to be permanent.
It's got to be a permanent definition.
What about that which is without a self?
Huh?
What about that which is without a self? It's considered a permanent definition.
That which is without a self is a permanent definition. Yeah, we could put that there. Yep, no problem. Both of those are permanent definitions. Yeah, it's just getting us to make our minds really flexible. This is what we're doing. We're just going back and forth. Can you see?
Mm-hmm.
We're broadening now where we're going back and forth.
So it is three possibilities.
No, we can find something that's neither. Well, it's neither an impermanent phenomena nor a definition.
Okay.
Uncomposed space.
Somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I think of four possibilities.
1, 2, 3.
Somewhere. So it would look like this. Here's where we have impermanent definitions. Here's where we have functioning things that are not definitions. And here's where we have definitions that are permanent. Or definitions of permanent phenomena.
And then outside here is easy.
Yeah, and then outside here are permanent phenomena that are not definitions. So this is just, it's like play. It's like wordplay. And it just, it gets easier with use.